Recently appointed CEO of Sasol, Simon Baloyi, joins us today to have a look at one of the most widely held shares amongst South Africans and one of the most important companies for the South African economy. What's happening at Sasol? Where's he going to be taking it? Are the mistakes of the past going to be not repeated? Mr. Baloyi, good talking with you. You are a chemical engineer, so one of those guys who certainly has excelled in the past. You've been with Sasol for quite some time. Did you go straight into Sasol from university?
Yeah, no, thank you. I had the privilege of having a Sasol bursary, so I've been at Sasol for more than 20 years.
And the elevation to the CEO position. In bygone years, Sasol liked to have engineers running the place, but it hasn't been the standard of late. Is this something that you anticipated? In other words, were you on some kind of a program to become the CEO one day?
No, I didn't anticipate it. As it goes, you just have to dedicate yourself, in what you do. But I had a fantastic career in Sasol. So I worked all the way from operations. I ran various functions. I ran in multiple geographies. I ran whole business units. At some point in time, I was running our chemical business unit. So I had extensive experience inside the company. So I think when this role came up, I also raised up my hand because at that time I was an executive who was looking after our entire operations in Southern Africa and our projects and research and technology. So I definitely had, deep insight into the organization and how it works.
And you certainly have been through the fire. Some of us remember very well how Sasol's share price plummeted. It was around 20 Rand a share. And we bought the shares in the BizNews portfolios, and I was still getting lots of emails then saying, are you crazy? This share price is going to null in the COVID era. Inside the organization, especially for a senior executive, that must have been a pretty tough time.
Yeah, it was a tough time, but good on you for buying at 20. So I think if I look at the prices today, maybe you must buy again. So, however, when the share price was 20, we definitely, I think, from an employee, especially the employees of Sasol, because, there's one thing about our people and this organization, there's a deep connection and a deep love, because, this is a wonderful organization with a fantastic history. So everyone that works in it, that sense of that history and our founders, you always can feel that because it's such an innovative company. However, in 2020, when the share price went down to 20 bucks, it was dire straits. But for me, what was impressive, from a management point of view, I was part of top management at that time. We came up with, at least a plan to, help rescue the company. Whether it was asset sales, because you remember we considered asset sales. We then, raised money from also selling a portion of divesting from a portion, not the entire LCCP, but a portion of the LCCP, which is just 50% of the cracker. And the downstream polymer units, but we maintain and retain all the derivative units. And then for me, the Sasol employees really came to the party because we did something that even myself, when I asked, the guys, my colleagues that were working for me at that time, I was working at Secunda Chemical Operations, and I told them, no, we have to, not only are we not going to get an increase, but we're going to ask all of you to actually do a salary sacrifice, which means a portion of your salary, you have to forfeit it. And I was surprised, and it was voluntary, that we had 100% subscription. So, you saw something about the spirit of the people of this great company. It's something that I always carry with me.
Extraordinary, extraordinary. And, well, just as well you have that spirit, because you're also carrying a lot of South Africans with you. 150,000 shareholders in Sasol ordinary shares, 200,000 shareholders in the BEE shares, 33% of your equity is held in unit trust, which would add a few more million to that shareholder base. Do you feel the pressure?
Yeah, of course, I feel the pressure. This is other people's, I mean, money that we're working with. So we definitely respect, I mean, the shareholders' capital. And it is my intention, together with my management team, to create shareholder value. I think we're learning from everything that we've been through. For me, when I look into the past, it's actually our resilience and innovative spirit that help us to go through challenges. And I think what we are able to do now, we are definitely going to be able to turn those challenges into opportunities. I mean, since I started, I mean, in April, I mean, it's already 5 months. I mean, already you can say hit the ground running. So we streamlined the organization, the top layers. We've already done that. We have changed the operating modeling completely. So I've separated the international chemicals. So that's now running by itself. I mean, even though I still have oversight, but you're not mixing up the chemical businesses. So you've got the international chemical business. Then you've got the Southern African business, because this one is a mainly predominantly coal and gas business. Whereas the international businesses, you've got, I mean, other feedstocks like, I mean, ethane, ethylene, and some, I mean, hydrocarbons and paraffin that you take the surfactants out of. So it's completely two different, I mean, geographies, Eurasia and Southern Africa. And it will help us as we go forward, because we must make sure that businesses don't subsidize each other, but everyone, it stands alone on itself.
That investment in the offshore arena has been very expensive. It's landed Sasol with a lot of debt. I guess with hindsight, there might be a few people saying, oh, maybe it wasn't such a good idea. But you do have it now in the portfolio, Lake Charles in Louisiana, the gas to liquids operations in Qatar. Are you looking to do more international investments?
I think for now, I mean, if you look at all our businesses globally, let me just step back a little bit into our strategy. So our near term, which is between now and the 3 years, is to what I call strengthen and grow. So we need to strengthen the foundation, whether it's locally or abroad. We have to make sure that businesses are running at full potential and generating the maximum possible cash. We're not yet there. I mean, some of the businesses, we are at 90%, but some of the businesses, especially internationally, we're actually much lower than where I want us to be. So our immediate focus is going to make sure that all businesses generate cash. Once we've generated full cash generation, once we've reached our potential, we'll then focus on, firstly, sustenance capital to make sure that we maintain our businesses from integrity and safety point of view. We'll continue doing that. Then we start taking the remaining capital, and then that's when the real competition for capital start. I mean, we have to leverage our balance sheet, and I'm glad that we've launched a new dividend framework and policy that's going to allow us to do that, so we can slowly start deleveraging, so that we can go below or go into what we call sustainable debt levels. But there has to be a healthy competition between growth and returning cash to the shareholders, and that growth has to be disciplined growth. So we have to learn all the lessons that we had in our recent past to make sure that as we continue to invest, whether it's local or international, it depends on opportunities. It has to be growth that is disciplined. So I mean, the first port of call, I mean, what I'll say is that internationally, we must first, I mean, we've launched self-help measures. So those self-help measures started on the 1st of April with the appointment of a new executive there to bring us insight. We have to make sure we strengthen those businesses to be sustainable by themselves. And if we do that, and if those businesses can generate money, it will definitely have that carrying capacity for the international businesses, and you can start exploring growth. But that's not a short-term, I mean, that's not a short-term issue there. It's about fixing those businesses first.
You talk about learning lessons from the past. The big criticism about Sasol in the investment community is your allocation of capital, probably for the last 15 years, has been questionable. You haven't shone there. So what lessons in particular will you be learning?
If you look at our past, I mean, major capital interventions. I mean, if you look at some of the projects that we've done, I mean, we're busy with the clean fuels projects in South Africa. That's going well. We are busy with a $1 billion project in Mozambique. That's reasonably going well. So when the projects were what we can contain, I mean, we did execute those projects, I mean, what in an acceptable manner. But however, the Lake Charles project was way too big for us. I think it was way too big for us alone. So the key lessons there for me and the team is partnership, is that sometimes, I mean, the project itself is a fantastic asset once it's finished. And if I look at others that have done the crack, they've also paid more or less the same, because that project is massive. I mean, if you see it, it's almost a quarter of a second. So it's a massive undertaking. And it's actually, I'm so proud when I look at it in terms of SASOL's execution capability. However, I mean, the cost component of it is not something that we want to repeat. So the only way to mitigate against that is partnership, to make sure that we don't overcommit ourselves. And it's something that lesson we're going to take with us going forward.
That's a fantastic insight. I guess the lesson also of promoting from locally rather than from bringing in international executives. So everybody knows the story there. Mr. Baloyi, just looking forward to the potential that exists in South Africa. We've been doing a lot of work at BizNews on the gas resources. One of the members of parliament, James Lorimer, reckons our gas is potentially another diamond or gold discovery opportunity. Yet not a heck of a lot has happened on this front for a variety of reasons. From Sasol's point of view, one would presume that you'd be well-placed, whether it's onshore gas in the Karoo or offshore gas in the Southern Cape, or indeed off on the West Coast, where if you look at the Orange River mouth to the north, Namibia's side, it's full of activity. To the south, South Africa's side, it seems to be pretty quiet. How are you looking at or seeing the potential here?
Yeah, I mean, when I look at this country, not only will I even talk about the natural resources, this country has fantastic potential. I mean, firstly, its people and diverse cultures. I mean, it's a massive boost for a country with such diverse thought and cultures that, I mean, somehow we find a way, I mean, to bring it together and then make it work. I mean, I think we, for some of the countries globally, we're actually a model country. I mean, believe it or not, people can learn from us in terms of how to, I mean, almost coexist. If you look at the natural resources, not only is it the gold, the minerals, I mean, the renewable resources. I mean, you remember the country is almost in the top four, top five in terms of sun and wind. And then there is also these hydrocarbon resources. Because you could see, I mean, if there is gas in Mozambique, gas in Mossel Bay, there is in Mossel Bay, then there is gas in the Orange Basin. You can see there's resources. I mean, there was even at some point in time, gas that people thought we have gas in the Karoo, which we didn't explore. So the country does have resources. And I know the Department of Mineral and Resources, I mean, are going to work hard to start enabling that. However, from Sasol's side, the initial focus is on LNG because we must, I'm just worried that there is gas running out in the south and we have these resources that will take almost 5 to 10 years to develop. However, in 2 to 3 years, we do need to make sure LNG is already running in the country to keep the current industries going. Otherwise, we go into another crisis. But post that, I'm just foreseeing that fantastic opportunities and partnerships will probably develop where those resources can be exploited. But we'll take it from there. For us, it's going to be purely on our strategy because how we want to invest our money, I spoke about the transform to say our company, South Africa, is predominantly a coal company. So I need to make sure that in the 2045, 2040 era, that company has transformed with the energy landscape in the country. So we're also going to focus on it. And gas, I mean, everyone sees gas as a transitional feedstock. We'll see. I mean, we'll start with LNG. And if opportunities arises based on disciplined capital allocation, we'll look into those. But that has to be based on affordability, where the company is going and what we can also afford.
It would appear from the outside that you have a significant advantage in the story that you've just told us because of your gas to liquid plant in Qatar. So you know how to use gas. And of course, you also have this feedstock coming in from Mozambique. You did, however, mention that that's running out.
Yes. I mean, if you look at our technical capabilities, I mean, Sasol does have extraordinary, I mean, technical capabilities. I mean, we did explore and find gas in the south of Mozambique. I mean, that's onshore. Offshore is a different story. I mean, we don't have lots of strength there, but I mean, if needs be and partnering comes, we can partner with others. However, like I said, that will not be our immediate, I mean, focus areas. Our immediate focus areas for me is to turn our technical resources to make sure the country has gas and working with others, whether it's IGUA, whether it's DMRE or DTIC, because for me, I mean, the stability of gas supply to the country is extremely important.
Just help us a little to understand Mozambique. Is that running out, the gas there?
Only in the south. So in the south of Mozambique, I mean, we're in the Pandete Manuels where we have gas reserves. That gas is now running out. So we don't have additional resources there. Mozambique has fantastic opportunities in the north. But that is also likely to come in as LNG because from where our plant is to the north is a 2,000 kilometer plus distance. So you're not going to put the pipeline that long. So also that is likely to be LNG. So I think if we already start investing or others invest in a terminal to bring LNG, it will also unlock that resource. And that's a fantastic resource. I mean, it's close or equivalent to the resource that Qatar has. So it shows you the potential of gas in the region as well. And that is a resource that's also very, very easy to explore. So I think for us, I mean, it gives us excitement to see all the opportunities and alternatives around us. But again, with timing, that's still very far off to develop that fully and bring it into the country.
Is that resource near to where Total has had its big discovery?
Yes, it's actually the same area. So all those resources, remember there is Total there, there is Eni, there's the Mozambican government themselves, is the Rovuma Basin, which is a massive find of gas.
And the Orange Basin, are you involved there at all, coming back to the west coast of South Africa?
No, the west coast, we were not involved in the Orange Basin. There's not actually lots of exploration from a South Africa side. I'm Shell is exploring on the Namibian side. I mean, by extension, you can assume there's possibly gas, I mean, on the SA side. However, I still see that as being very far off in terms of resolving the immediate needs of the country's gas, because you'll need to build a pipeline to bring that gas, you know, transport it with LNG. However, that still remains an opportunity in the future. And I think it will depend on how everything unfolds, whether that will be explored or not.
And then before we move off gas, Kinetico, Don Lube's company, which is doing very well, it tells us, in Mpumalanga. It's a small business. Is there gas feedstocks there that could replace or help you to replace what you're bringing in from Mozambique?
Yeah, we've been in touch with the Kinetico guys. They've spoken to our teams that the volumes of that gas will not replace the gas from Mozambique. So the volume that we're using from Mozambique, yeah, we do need lots of high volumes. We need around, 160 to 200 petajoules of gas. The Kinetico gas find will not be able to fill that gap. So, and then it's still also, it's still drilling and exploration. So the aggregation of that gas as well is still a little bit far off. However, the pipeline is there. The network is there. I am certain that once the gas are ready, they'll be able to feed that gas into the pipeline.
I'd like to explore the Baloyi era of Sasol and how it's going to be different to the past. We do know that Sasol produces 40% of South Africa's fuels, and that's always been the big driver of revenues and profits for the company. There has been big investment into chemicals to balance that portfolio. Are you going to continue in a more balanced area, or will you be investing more here in South Africa?
Yeah, for us, the balance is great. I mean, the balance is great because it allows you, it provides you with almost a natural hedge. When chemicals are down, oil is up. When oil is down, chemicals are up. So you have the two businesses having the ability to support each other. Remember, we have a fantastic business internationally. That business, we will have to implement what I call self-help measures to maximize its cash generating potential. That gives us the ability to generate US dollars and euros. So we'll continue with making sure we run that business properly. At home, however, this is a massive, fantastic asset. It's an asset which is amongst the highest taxpayers. It employs lots of people. If you look at indirectly, we're talking about 500,000 jobs that are linked, directly and indirectly to Sasol, more than 5% of the GDP. So it's a massive cornerstone of the economy. If you look at the fuel that we provide to the inland, up to 40% of inland fuel. So quite simply, the company is irreplaceable. So it has to be part of this landscape for as long as it takes. And you just spoke about the resources in this country. So for me, there will definitely be investment as we transition, because this company must transition from predominantly coal into a sustainable energy company. And most of that we'll want to do at home. So there will be massive investments at home. But before we get ahead of ourselves, we must first fix our balance sheet, make sure we've got a very, very strong balance sheet. And once we have it, we can explore near-term growth areas. So that's simple, low-hanging fruit growth areas. We'll do that. Then we'll embark on our transformation. And our transformation, we'll look at various areas. We did tell the market that at Capital Markets Day, we'll be exploring various options, and we're going to share them with the market in terms of how we see the company transitioning into a sustainable giant in the country.
It's very interesting to me to have a look at your shareholder base with the PIC. Obviously, they do invest long-term, and the IDC, both very big shareholders, but also in there is Alan Gray, who do seem to look beyond the cycles. If I can understand or paraphrase from what you've said, Sasol's got a balance sheet, which it needs to get fixed. That's why you didn't pay dividends or a final dividend this year. And that's why you've now put in a $4 billion minimum for your debt. Unless it's below $4 billion, you're not going to pay a dividend. And I guess from a shareholder point of view, those hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people who are watching you, when will you get to a point where that threshold will be comfortable, where you can actually resume dividends again, given that you at your end were sitting at $4.1 billion? So you're not much above it.
Yeah, we're not much above it. We've set the $4 billion as our risk appetite. So once we go below that, we will resume paying dividends. So if you look at the cash generation ability of the company, we should be able to do it in FY25. That's the challenge that I've given to the team, because we're paying as a percentage of free cash flow generated from operations. So notwithstanding a major event or some unforeseen risk, we should comfortably start to be below four, and then we'll continue, with that dividend policy. That should help us to bring down our debt, net debt to EBITDA. We see it going to a range of 0.5 to 1 times, which will mean that debt will be around $2 to $3 billion. That's where if we arrive there, then we'll be comfortable and we can start stepping up dividends.
And it would also allow you the scope to continue investing, which clearly from the conversation we've had is a big story. Just to end off with, your new chief financial officer, Walt Bruns, it's all change at the top at Sasol at the moment. Are you seeing more energy being unleashed by these changes?
Yeah, exactly. Precisely. We've put a fantastic team of mainly, homegrown talent and one person from outside. Now and then you do need some external perspective so that you don't, have blind spot that you don't see. But I'm so encouraged by the team. We have a fantastic team. Walt Bruns is the latest addition to that. We have Victor Best as well with massive experience. He's worked locally, internationally. We added Dr. Sarushen Pillay as well to look at our future businesses. That excites me. And we are the guys that are already there. Kept the experienced people like Vuyo Kahla, Charlotte Mokoena, and Herman Venoth. And we also brought in Christian Herman. He's also a Sasol person who's going to look at our chemicals and energy marketing and sales. So, yes, we've got a dynamic team, lots and lots of energy, lots and lots of hard work from all the colleagues. And, yeah, we're so excited and energized by the challenges and opportunities that lie ahead of us.
Simon Baloyi is the Chief Executive of Sasol. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.